So when it all seems lost, God gives reason to hope. I mean, isn't that kind of what comes out of the story of Joseph? I mean, this morning, you know, I even drew on the board kind of this roller coaster looking shape, which would either be called a sinusoid or a sine or cosine graph. I've learned that now. I'm so happy that I know that. But I don't really know anything beyond that. I just know that's what it's called. But when all seems lost, God gives reason to hope. I mean, he really does. Probably if you had opportunity, as we've had in our family this week, to kind of trace back, and you should do this. I want to encourage you to do this as a family. I don't know why I thought of Andrew and Jeanette, but I guess because when we started rehearsing or reviewing the story of our life, it took us back first to our time when before we had kids, you know, and we lived in this little apartment and all of that, is when I thought I knew something, and now I know that I don't. My wife has trained me that she knows better. And the thing is, I've learned that she actually does. So we've grown in relationship. But it's a good thing, and I would encourage you as a family, go back, trace your family's story, and look for those peaks and valleys. I mean, you can probably do it just in your mind briefly and think, you know what? We really have come through a lot. How long are you guys married? 14 years and counting. How long are you guys married? 40 years? I didn't think you could marry at 5. 40 years old. How long are 40 years married? How long are you married? 25. Coming this year, or did you just already 25? So it was like a big shebang and everything, right? Big gifts and all that. You guys, is this year two you're on? 1 year done, 2 years. How long are you guys married? 3 years in July. I don't know why I didn't plan to ask any of those questions, but I got to thinking about our family's story. And that God, even when things seem like, you know what, is this going to work out? You can go back, and by going back, it helps you to believe forward. I'm really convinced of that. And I've even said to my wife, you know, I refuse to worry because it's like slapping God in the face, you know. He's just proved himself again and again and again. So I hope that you're digging roots as a family, reviewing your story. It's a good thing to do every year. And that's probably one of the reasons why I enjoy reading the story as we're reading it, because it is God's story and God's story of his faithfulness. It all starts out good, you know, Adam and Eve, and all is good, and then it all goes bad. But then from Noah, we get this idea that he can really change things around. He can't use Noah as a man, but it could be through an individual that God could really change things around. And so he already, from the beginning, he starts kind of, you know, foreshadowing that there could be a Messiah figure, a Savior person that could come. And Noah portrays that. Abraham gives us the story that God will do what he says he will do. You know, he's faithful and he's able. And this is just, it's this amazing story of this, you know, ends up being kind of this old man and this old woman, and nobody would expect it. So much so that the idea of laughter comes out of it. I love the thought that God created laughter. I love the thought that a major part of his history has the name laughter at the very top of it. I mean, because God just does these amazing things. And we hear from Abraham, God can do it. He absolutely can do it. And then we get to Joseph. And Joseph's story, his story would teach us that endurance, you know, encouragement to just keep on going, endure. We have reason to hope. We should never stop hoping. We should be able to go back and say, I know this is where I am now, but I don't have to despair. It's interesting how God weaves his message throughout our days when we come together, that we have reason not to despair. I heard a story. Tom Hughes is a guy who I'm really borrowing a lot of his thoughts. That's one of the fun things about the story, too, is everybody, there's lots and lots of stuff out there on the internet about it, you know, and how did you process this story? And he tells a story of the surveyor. He came up to a door, he knocks on the door, and this little girl comes up, and she answers the door, and she says, can I help you? And he says, yes, I'm, is your mom here? And she says, no, She ain't here. She's in rehab. Oh, okay, well, can I talk to your dad? No, he ain't here. He's in prison. Oh, well, let's see, do you have like a big sister maybe I could talk to? I got a big sister, but she ain't here. She's off in some big city somewhere doing something. Well, how about your brother? Do you have an older brother? Yep. Can I talk to him? No, he ain't here. He's at Harvard. Harvard? Really? What is he doing in Harvard? What is he studying there? Nah, he ain't studying nothing. They're studying him. Joseph gives us an opportunity, to study a life. I thought that was really funny. But a shame all at the same time. But that's what we get to do. We get to peer into these people's lives, you know, and we get to, in part, and we kind of experience this in class too, as we look into their lives, we do kind of imagine, at least I do, imagine myself in those positions. And so in class, you know, we talked about the humanity of Joseph and how I kind of do that. But that's me putting myself, you know, who would I be? What would I be like going through similar experiences? And I'm glad that Joseph is the way that he was, because it teaches us this idea that when all seems lost, God gives reason to hope. It's a great story of perseverance. It's a great story of persistent faith and almost like a determination or a stubbornness to just trust God that comes out in Joseph's story. You know, there's a lot. Joseph's story is quite a long story in terms of the real estate it takes up in Genesis. I mean, it's a significant portion of it. And I think that's with good reason. You know, do you remember the game Life? We played that game, I guess the first time a couple years ago with the kids. And the game about life is, everybody starts out, and then along the way, you make choices. And based on your choices depends on whether or not you're successful or not. And if you make the right path, then on the end, you know, you can have a college education, you can be a doctor, you can have a high wage, you can have this. It's very defining all of this is what success is. And so when we were playing, I decided I'm going to enable the choices that actually made. Like, I'm going to see what life is headed. Even though in the end, life is prophetic. Maybe it's prophetic. I made the choices that we actually have made in our life. And then I tried to, because, you know, the game extends just a little bit beyond where we are now. And actually, it doesn't go that much further because I'm getting older all the time. But I thought about, okay, well, in that situation, what do I anticipate? You know, what do I think I will do? And so when we got to the end of the game, I had absolutely no money left. I had spent my last dollar on the last day. And I decided, I'm a winner. Like, I used it all up. I didn't waste anything. That was like a story of efficiency, you know? Look how efficient I was. Now, it doesn't really leave a legacy for my kids, you know, in terms of wealth. And sometimes you get these financial plans that, you know, you have a responsibility to leave a financial legacy to your kids. And I'm not against any of that necessarily. But I kind of feel like if I could leave a legacy of faithfulness, that would be more, you know, more important. And if it ends up that they're millionaires or whatever, wonderful, you know. They may not get that from me, though, apparently, according to the game. But life doesn't, you know, it doesn't always work out that way, does it? When you're a kid, did you read a book? Did you ever see one of those books that you get about halfway through and then it says, okay, you can go to page 9 now, and it'll be one end of the story. Or you can go to page 12 and it'll be another end of the story. And you can like keep rereading the book and it changes. And you can just kind of pick and choose. Oh, yeah, I like that ending. I think I'll go that way. But life doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes we make choices and they don't lead to where they think they were going to lead. Or sometimes choices are made about, you know, or for us, or other people make choices and they affect our life. So it would be a nice idea that we could actually navigate. And that's why I was really intrigued, Hannah, in class when you talked about, you know, lack of control, this idea of lack of control. We want to feel like we have control. and things are secure. But every once in a while, we're reminded, and it's a healthy reminder, that we're not in control. Joseph's story tells us that. You know, and what's interesting about his story is decisions. It starts out with he has this dream, and he doesn't understand it. And sometimes that's the way it is with all of us. Well, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, I have this dream. I want to be a fireman. I want to be a policeman. I want to be a cameraman. I wanted to be a cameraman, by the way. I wanted to be one of those guys that flies around in helicopters and hangs out the side and is like taking video of wild animals out in the bush. Doesn't that sound exciting? My mom said, you should be a teacher. It's safe. So she really guided us in that direction, all three of us. You should be a teacher. But so we start off with dreams just like Joseph did. And maybe they're not as clear as Joseph's. Maybe they are, but maybe we don't understand them just like he did. But like he didn't understand it at first is what I mean. But then some decisions are made for us. When we look at Joseph's life, does it seem weird to you that Jacob's just like obviously showing favoritism to one of his kids? Did that trouble you about the story? It does me. I mean, obviously I have a favorite, but they don't know which one it is. that's probably not a good parenting skill, you know. It'd be like, you know, I'm going to buy Abby an iPad for Christmas and give the rest of them Chia Pets, you know. Just doesn't work so well. Now, well, yeah. But they, so he gets this coat. You know, that wasn't his choice. He doesn't do that. And he just reacts to it honestly. But it causes some things in his life, you know, that maybe aren't so great. Even the dream that he gets. You know, he's kind of excited about this dream. He gets this vision. And have you ever had a vision that just excites you? You know, you just think, hey, I see it all. I think this is really exciting. And you don't really even know where it came from, but you feel impressed by God. The other night, it was 3:00 in the morning. My eyes popped open, and I wrote down 13 chapters of a book. That may be all right. It just was all there. I've got it on my phone right here. I just hope my battery doesn't die. You know, and I lose everything or whatever. But it was just there. Sometimes that kind of stuff happens, you know, and you get so excited about it. Well, he gets this dream. It wasn't his fault. And he's exciting. He's telling his brothers. He's like, guys, I had this crazy dream. Now, I will talk to my kids directly here. And you got, look, if you get a dream and it's about Abby bowing down to you and serving you, you might all just keep it to yourself, you know. I mean, he's not really, but doesn't it kind of speak of his innocence? I mean, that's what I kind of hear from that. And he's excited, and he should be. But, you know, maybe he was a brat. I'm not sure. But he obviously, you know, he was receiving some of this stuff. His brothers, you know, their decision totally changes Joseph's life. Maybe it was in reaction to him being a brat. Maybe he didn't control those things well. But the fact of the matter still is his brothers make this choice. You know, we're going to kill him or we're going to, and then it turns out we're going to throw him in a cistern and sell him to slavery and all these kinds of things. And these bad things happen. And then the whole deal with Potiphar's wife. And I mean, that's a pretty impressive thing. If he's, what, maybe 18, 19 years old at this point, perhaps, we don't know exactly. But for him to say, yeah, you know what? God's with me through all of this, and I'm going to be faithful and honor him with my body. That's huge. But my point is, he didn't end up there because of his decision. He's just trying to do good things. So sometimes decisions, you know, other people's decisions impact us. And one of the questions, where is God when things go wrong? And it's not by our doing, because there's a reality in that. You know, sometimes it takes the form of sickness. Sometimes it takes the form of relationship challenges. Kathy was just visiting with a wife the other day from our homeschool community, and she said, "You know, my husband, he's just not interested in a marriage." And you just think, oh. And she desperately wants, you know, a marriage and a strong family and kids, and she's working so hard at that. But that's not her decision. I mean, there may be some things that she's done wrong, but that's not what she would want. Where is God when things go wrong? and it's not by our doing. You know, here's what the story tells us. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. And oftentimes things imprison us. Sometimes they are by our doing. And we find ourselves, we are in prison. And, you know, things sometimes, but we're not. And things are so good, and it was all good for a while. But man makes these decisions, and it all went from all good to all of a sudden, particularly in Joseph's life, now it's all bad. And it says, but God went with him. And there's this idea that we understand from Joseph's story that when we leave the garden life, when we make mistakes or whatever, other people do things bad to us and it's not working out, well, God goes with us. He's with us in those dark periods. He's with us in those dark times. God is with us in the garden, and he's with us in the dungeon too. I mean, where is God when it's not going well? Well, he's with you. He's still there. And that is something for us to hold on to. The question is, how do we respond to disappointments? And this is really the point that, you know, that Rhonda was bringing out this morning in class, of how impressed she is with Joseph. And I am too. And that's the big challenge for us. How do you respond to disappointments? Joseph, he's like, I know the situation I'm in, but we get this idea that, but I am going to trust in God. Glimpses of things like, you know, when he gets an opportunity about a dream and he's like, yeah, actually, I think I know what that means. I got that figured out. And they ask him about it. He's like, well, look, I can't interpret it, but God interprets it. I mean, he keeps this very conscious, very intentional idea that God is the one who is with me. God is the one who is in control. And I might or might not be feeling this certain way, but I am determined to trust God. I'm determined to. How do you respond in the face of disappointment? You know, how do you respond in the face of challenges? There was a survey done of singles, young adult singles, and the survey said that 90%, they responded, 90% of them, you know, they're disappointed in their situation. They wish that they weren't single, and their main struggle, their single strongest or main struggle, 90% of them said it's with sexual sin. When the guy where I read this, when he was telling about this, he said, and I quickly figured out that the other 10%, their main struggle is lying. But in that situation, you know, I might be disappointed in my situation. I might be, you know, but how will I respond to that? Will I trust God, and will I do things God's way? Have you heard about this study on what texting is doing to relationships and the whole dating scene? I didn't know anything about it. One of my students is going to write a senior thesis about this very thing. And there's this idea of premature intimacy that is being cultivated through this connection of texting with kids. Because basically they have this person that they're interested in, they carry them around 24/7. Texting, constantly. And you may have experienced this. Many people will text something that they would never say to you face to face. Have you experienced that? And so those phenomena coming together are creating these relationships that are very, very intimate at a very young age. You know, intellectually, emotionally intimate, even though they might not be around each other very much. And it's creating this strange dynamic in the dating scene. Something that, you know, when I was a kid, we did stretch the phone cord all the way through the kitchen and, you know, get behind the closed door. But, you know, it was like, get off the phone! You know, we did have that. But there were times when you just had to hang up, you know, and you were disconnected. But now, it's not like that. Now it's really 24/7 access. And so, you know, like in our home, we have to say, you know, it's time to turn your phones in, because 24 access isn't a healthy thing. And it's just another dynamic. You know, how will we respond in situation? Will we honor God? Will we have this determination? Will our kids have this determination? I will honor God. That's what I'll do. And that's a huge message that comes from Joseph. He just decided, you know what? That's what I'm going to honor God. We have to do that in our marriages. We have to do that in our finances. You know, do we sometimes feed or try to cover over our disappointments with credit card? You know, and just purchasing. So easy to do that. It's easy to do that with food. It's easy to do that with all kinds of things in our life. And recognizing, you know what? I have got to honor God in every aspect of my life. How do you respond to the disappointments in your life? We learned from Joseph's story that God's word always comes to pass, and that if we hold on, which is what we need to do, we just hold on. And sometimes it's a long time. God blesses. I mean, isn't that Joseph's story? He remains stubbornly persistent to God. And God's like, I can use that. I can use that. You ever thought that what would happen if Joseph hadn't been that faithful? I wonder how things would have worked out. I mean, we don't know that for sure, how things would have worked out, of course. We know what we know. But we hear, and this is what we know from the story, is that God honors our faithfulness when we hold on. When I think of that, I think about, we watched Tom Hanks' Castaway a little while ago with the kids. They'd never seen it before, you know. And I was watching them whenever Wilson floated away in the water. I was peering over at them. And finally, Liam just, he had to say something. He's like, that's sad. I was wanting to see if he's going to cry, because I cried whenever he said, Wilson, you know. But you remember the beginning of that movie when he's in that storm. He's just got to hold on. And that's the way it is. And Joseph's story says, you know what? Joseph comes to the end of his life, and this is what it reads. The story says, Joseph says, what you intended for harm, God intended for good, to accomplish what is now being done. God's word comes to pass. His promises are true. You know, I guess what we see is that God was not just with Joseph through it all, but that God was at work in it all. I mean, if just the idea that God is traveling through these things with us and breathing into us whatever it is that we need in the moment with the Spirit of God. Maybe we need faithfulness. Maybe we need boldness. Maybe we need words. Can I embarrass you just for a second? So I get this text from Charlie this week. Would you pray for my daughter? Because she is going to share her faith with her boyfriend's parents. Would you pray for her? I got to tell you, I mean, I prayed for you. And I was so proud that you're willing to enter into these discussions. Because that's scary land. It's scary land for everybody to become that vulnerable and to know that I don't know all the questions. I mean, the answers to all the questions. But I'm willing to try. That is so huge. That is so huge. And we step into those situations with this truth that we learn from Joseph's life. God travels with us and He's at work in those circumstances. He was right there with you that whole time. And who knows where that will go and what will come of it. And they'll learn some things and you'll learn some things. And God will be doing amazing things in that space between the two of you. And His truth will come out. It will come out more in you and it will come out more in them because He's at work. And you said, I'll try. That's just amazing to me. I'm sorry if I embarrassed you, but it's just so encouraging. You know, Joseph, it's significant that Joseph is not disappointed in the result of his perseverance. He's not disappointed. In fact, the passage that holds true is that God is able to do immeasurably more than anything that we could ask. And I love the second part. Or even imagine. Like, God can do more than you could even think of. More than you can think of, God can do. And He's doing it. If that doesn't encourage you, I love that God is that way and that we get to know that He is that way. If God is redeeming Joseph's story, if God is redeeming the Israelites' story, it's always been about God redeeming your story. Because you're a part of it. You're caught up in all of this. I thought this was a great quote. God is making beauty out of brokenness. He's making good out of good for nothing. He's making hope out of the most hopeless chapters of our life. He's making hope. Because He's faithful. You know, I want to say thank you for what you did last week. I know that it wasn't, you know, the most fun thing for you to do. And I know that as we look, you know, at the future and think, okay, well, there's some uncertainty there. And, you know, we got some decisions to make and all of that. You know, you and I are experiencing what it is to be the remnant. I want to say thank you for what you did last week. And I want to say to you that God is at work. All things work for good for those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. He is at work. You know, we don't always get to know the whys. We don't always get to know the hows. But we do get to know that God is at work. And good things are coming. And so we are faithful. As we've always been. What, you know, the fun thing is that when I've looked back at my life, what I've noticed is that what's happened before has always prepared me for what's happening in the present. Rarely have I known what was coming next or had any inkling of it. And usually it was far different than I ever imagined. But when I got there, I was like, I know how to do this. Because back here, I really screwed things up and now I know better. Or something along those lines. But I realized, you know, just looking, and I have a relatively short life. God really is good. He really is at work. And I have total confidence that He is continuing to work here in this place. You know, how many times have we been amazed at what we've decided in advance to look at was in God's Word is exactly what we needed to be looking at in that moment. It's like God prepared it for us. That was exactly what we needed to hear. And here we are again. I continue to believe that He has His fingerprints all over us. So I don't know. I don't have to just imagine that I am in Joseph's story and kind of put myself in his place. The truth is, I got my own place. And maybe a couple thousand years from now, someone's going to be reading a book and they're going to say, and there is this guy, Dan Langdon. They changed his name to Japhapheneth or whatever. But there was this guy. Or there was this little boy named Owen. I can't wait to hear Owen's story. God is at work. And we get to play a part. And it really is a blessed life. When all things seem lost or whatever, we always have reason to hope. Paul decided this. I know whom I've believed, And I am convinced that He's able to keep what I've entrusted to Him until that day. And we live by those words. Not because they're Paul's, because we've learned to make them our own. Let's pray together.